Hello there.
Hello, my friend. How are you?
Good. Let me take my hat
Good.
off. Take my hat off.
Yeah.
Stay a while. How about
Well, I
that?
don't know. You can do whatever you want. You be you. I mean,
You know I'm
you're a.
always me,
I
Craig.
mean, you've taken the Beer Net Radio 2.0 reboot to a next level. I mean, you got
Right?
great guests. You got great content. You've been able to opine in ways that you may choose to do with the spoken word that you would not do with the written word.
Indeed.
And I think you're performing a very important service, brother.
Well, thank you. I do appreciate that. It's been a year and a half in the making, but it's starting to gel. And Jen and Jordan are getting better, and I'm getting a little better.
That's good.
Yeah, it's fun. I like it. I enjoy it. You know what, Craig? I just want to welcome you to Beer Net Radio because this is the podcast where all your dreams come true.
Man,
We
killing it.
have Craig Purser here. Who is the is it pre what is your title? I don't really know.
I am actually the chief bottle washer at the National Beer Wholesalers Association, but
That's too
labor
bad
of
because
love.
we sell everything in cans now,
Yeah,
so
well, that's all right. The bottles still need to be clean, I assure you. And with some of the inventory challenges that we have, I may need to be cleaning some kegs out. We'll see.
right, no kidding. Well, anyway, Craig is chief bottle washer with the National Beer Wholesalers Association, the association that represents wholesalers around the country. And Craig, before we get started, because I want to talk about this 86th annual convention that's coming up in Vegas, because I got a fever, okay? I got a fever, and you got the cure, and that cure is Vegas, baby. I'm
Vegas,
so
baby.
ready. I looked
Vegas
over
is.
the whole schedule this morning. I've put circles around which one. The seminars are fantastic this year. I'm not just saying that. They're really good. Like, not the same bullshit.
Yeah, no, it's we're always trying to up our game, and what we're trying to do is take to the members what we think they need. It is no secret that 2023 has been an insane year in this industry. We've had some black swan events that have occurred that nobody could have imagined in their wildest dreams, in their worst nightmares. We have a community where some folks are selling more beer than they ever could have imagined, and we have some that are dealing with incredible once in a career, once in a blue moon shock losses. And so that's creating a lot of challenge and a lot of opportunity. And I think what we're going to do, and this is kind of thematic for this year's convention, we're going to talk about leadership. And we're going to talk about, what is needed when it comes to times of challenge and times of opportunity, leadership. We're going to talk about driving greater efficiencies through technology and the sharing of best practices. And obviously, the fundamentals of this industry are still something to celebrate. So we will be bringing the entire industry together to advance it, in a meaningful way. So super excited about the content, super excited about the level of engagement. We got a lot of folks that are showing up. Caesar's Palace rooms are getting tight. We're seeing registration and rooms kind of in a competition. We're ahead of schedule as far as getting folks in, but we want people to register and come join us October 8th through 11th.
8th through 11th. And I actually made my flight and hotel and I registered. I mean, this is way ahead of
I
schedule
mean,
for me.
this is the new Harry 2.0. I
It
mean,
really is.
usually it's
It's
a week
pathetic.
out and you're, texting me after hours and saying, "Hey man, can you get me into the hotel?"
Right. No worries this year. And I spoke with a mutual friend of ours this morning, Craig, and he specifically wanted me to ask you if Famous Amos was going to be the keynote speaker
We
this year.
were unable to get Famous Amos, but we do have a lights out list of speakers. Getting people to come and motivate a bunch of beer distributors is always an interesting issue, and we're trying to think about what people can do to give a little bit of relevance and a little bit of what is the industry interested in. And we got some familiar faces and we got some new faces too. We're real excited about Gavin Hattersley being able to join us. I think he last joined us on the stage probably 17, 16 or 17, and a lot of changes with Molson Coors. And obviously they've got some things that I think they're interested in sharing, some perspectives. But I
That's and
also,
that's that, sorry to interrupt you, but
no,
that
that's
I mean
okay.
that what
Sure,
a what
show.
a I mean that's a great get for right now to Gavin, because I mean, that guy's been busy. Let's put it that way. And so it would be interesting to get his perspective.
Well, and I think, you know, one of the things that's perspective that's important as we've dealt with, you know, the brand disruption this year, part of the underbelly of this, and you've done a great job of covering it, has been, you know, the brand challenge that is related to the category challenge. And just like some have said that the brand challenge accelerated some trends, it's accelerated some challenge to the category. And if you follow, you know, and it's not Jim Cook's leaky bucket theory, but it, you know, he talks about it an awful lot. When we look at those cases of beer that have fallen off trucks as a result of supplier actions, we're not getting all of that volume back. The leaky right. buckets are going to spirits. They're going to wine. They're not going to non-alcohol products. You know, one of the big takeaways of this summer's Gallup survey was the number of emerging LDA consumers that are choosing not to drink beverage alcohol.
Yeah.
And that's
a problem.
That combined with some of the things that we started talking about 5 years ago, as it relates to problems with beer, as it relates to emerging LDAs, you know, I hate it, Harry. I hate it when we're right. But, you know, this is a big issue. And so I'm looking forward to hearing from Gavin and a number of the other leaders about their thoughts and their observations about how we grow, protect, and defend and advance, you know, traditional beer. We're losing occasions, you know, and there are some pockets of success, and we want to share those.
Right. And, you know, when you talk about beer, you know, Lester has talked about like a lot about this, and it really, you know, we focus so hard on what Anheuser-Busch has lost and what Molson Coors and Modelo and Yingling have gained and Pabst and others, but they're not gaining all those cases back. And habit is such a hard thing to break. And once you have broken that habit, all bets are off. You know, if you're not going to drink Bud Light anymore, you may not choose another beer. You may choose Tito's or something else. So,
let me just say it this way. Preach on, brother. Because that is exactly what we've got to have everybody, the entire industry community, kind of push reset and come together to talk about that. And all this is, it's not all negative. You know, I'll pick on Cook because I mentioned him in the leaky buckets, and you know, had his commentary from the finance meeting this week, from the Barclay meeting. But, you know, the whole notion of the expansion of the category is still a very happening thing. It's still very relevant. It's still very positive. There are all kinds of new market entrants that want to be on a beer truck. That's expansion into non-alcohol. That's expansion into ready-to-drink cocktails. That's expansion into, you know, all kinds of things. I mean, one of the things that we're reminded of as it relates to litigation in the industry is litigation between two big suppliers that had its roots just 11 years ago from the 2012 acquisition and creation of Constellation's beer division. And of course, the acquisition of Modelo by AB, you know, we didn't have a seltzer category 11 years ago. That wasn't even really thought of. And when you look at something that has provided a lot of liquid refreshment and a lot of volume and a lot of GP contribution and a lot of profits for a lot of folks in the industry, you know, that's the reminder of how innovative this is. We don't know what's next. So while we need to be bold and we need to be truthful about the challenges that beer is experiencing, we likewise have to be optimistic, and we have to be positioning ourselves to diversify to meet the changing needs of the consumer.
Right. And then layer on top of that, the crossover brands and the cola companies and Monster getting into the business in varying ways. One company, you know, setting up its own beer distributor. Is like, what do you think, like, the overall theme of this conference or the vibe, if you don't have like a stated theme, like, what do we,
It is defending the category. It is expanding the category. It is promoting the category, and it is advancing and advocating the category. Those are the themes. I mean, that's a huge part of what I think the beer distributor of the future is going to look like. And that's one of the things we're going to have a panel discussion of distributors talking exactly about that. What do we think each one of those looks like? Because, you know, there are a lot of things that suppliers do and do well, and they all of them make good liquid. I think sometimes we, the distribution tier, are waiting for them on solutions that they're not necessarily going to provide. They're certainly not going to provide it for the distributors. So those distributors that are looking at the future and looking at where the industry is going and acting independently, frankly, just like the suppliers are doing, are going to be the ones that are most, that are best positioned. I mean, we've watched all of the major manufacturers diversify their interests, some with success, some with less success, whether it's ready to drink cocktails, whether it's dabbling in spirits, whether it's even entering and retreating the CBD beverage industry. All of these are risks that those suppliers are taking. And I think distributors need to be looking at their businesses similarly. So that's kind of what we're going to be talking about, is celebrating the things that we know are good, but also offering some value as it relates to how we can do better.
Right. Because the I guess, you know, the old days of the back and forth loyalty are kind of gone. I mean, it wasn't even that long ago when most AB distributors were exclusive to AB, and think of how absurd that is today. But you're right. I mean, we've seen several brewers that bring on spirits products and they go with spirits wholesalers. And we have non-alc, you know, coming out. We have brewers coming out with non-alc and they get a non-alc contract. And so, yeah, there's not loyalty goes both ways, brother. And so, yeah, you got to grab what you can that makes sense. And it's not just same old beer on the truck.
And I would just add to that, the whole notion when we talk about distributor independence, that's not a defiant cry. That is not necessarily an in your face or a back of the hand or a waving a finger at somebody. It is simply looking at what's going on in your marketplace and looking at the future of your book of products, of what lines of business you're in, of where you think your market's going to go, and acting independently to advance that. I think we can make the case for sure in some places where legacy brands have been the beneficiary of distributors acting. And I'm talking about more for taking on new product, where, you know, the mix, the product mix, and the ability of the distributor to drive efficiency and meet the needs of the retailer and the consumer, they're actually helping give a second look or a second life to some of those legacy brands.
Well, you're right. And I think two things really proved the middle tier's worth. One was the pandemic and just continuing to service those accounts. And then number two is, you know, the backstopping that we're seeing a lot of AB distributors do, so that this situation with the Mulvaney thing isn't a lot worse. And I think, you know, I think in the past, some big brewers, not just AB, but kind of thought that was hokey. Oh, the hometown thing, yeah. The, you know, being a part of your community, doing the fun run, supporting this and that. It's like, yeah, or whatever. But it's kind of important now when you need it.
Well, and, I mean, you know, that's certainly an issue. And, you know, we understand the relationship between brewers and distributors. But, you know, the whole idea of being able to be flexible has never been more important. And the opportunity or the necessity to be able to switch horses when you have a disruption or an interruption is, you know, we've all learned a very valuable lesson about that. And a lot of distributors have made difficult choices about how to position that best in their local markets, how to speak with their own voice about what's going on out there. Sometimes if your partner's silent, you've got to fill that space because you've got customers that are looking to you. And sometimes there are opportunities for distributors to raise their profile and, to point out that indeed, they are the supplier for all this big book of product in their local, communities. So I think that's definitely part of this.
I've noticed actually just in the last couple of years, the distributors are becoming more public. I guess the old school kind of thing was circle the wagons, don't put your head up, keep low. And now you see press releases coming out every day from distributors. Look what we did here. Look what we did. You never saw press releases from distributors before. But anyway, I'm getting off topic.
No, but it's a great point. I mean, the rolling inventory. We'll just pick on rolling inventory. Is not the property of the supplier. They have something that they want you to do, but that is not their property. They aren't paying for those trucks. So the whole notion of being able to build or maintain or grow a distribution brand has value. It helps oftentimes, balance or mitigate a challenge. And we've seen that take place as we've watched, brand disruption and then other brands fill that void. And by the way, it's not just Anheuser-Busch brands versus others. We've seen that happen inside Anheuser-Busch distribution houses. We've seen that with the Ultra and the Busch families kind of filling of that void. So all of that right. matters.
Right. I wanted to talk about the Olympic Eagle and Constellation case. And we reported earlier this week that you guys had provided or filed another amicus brief. Is it amicus brief?
Amicus and amicus, they tell me, are both correct.
Yeah, I always heard it was amicus, and then everybody's going around saying amicus, and it's my whole worldview is thrown upside down.
It's a Latin word. It means friend. It's like amigo.
Right. And so, what the stage we're at now is the appeal, and you guys made some points. I guess why did you feel compelled to file an amicus brief, and what did it say?
Yeah, I think simply we think that the 3-judge panel got it wrong. And, the court system allows you to appeal. And Olympic Eagle chose to go forward. We looked at the arguments. We felt like our brief did not get considered because the panel acted quickly. There's a whole bunch of reasons for that I'm not sure that the audience cares about. But, there's a certain notion of this. This was something that our leadership was very involved in, the decision to file the initial amicus. And the support for filing it was widespread. We had a discussion among our elected leaders and followed a process. And the idea was, there was an appeal and we wanted to support that appeal for the same reasons we filed the amicus. So not a lot of new reasons. It's just simply, we know this from all of the different litigation, either between the states or with the states, oftentimes the states defending their statutes. In this case, this was an action where, the disputes between a supplier and a distributor, and it was a performing distributor, a distributor that was meeting their needs, a distributor that was recognized at the supplier's convention for, meeting their objectives and winning an award, and they sought to terminate that without cause. Remember the things that were part of that appeal. And this is important, Harry, because this was a different case in as much as it was in the federal system. It was at the appeals level. And what was being appealed was injunctive relief, which simply means when there's a dispute, you can say time out. And we'll litigate this, we'll arbitrate this, whatever the circumstances may be. So not really big news that we followed up with a second amicus. Largely said, please read our brief.
Tell me why it's important real quick. I mean, because does this set, let's just say OE loses these points, Is it set a bad precedent for other distributors in other states?
Well, it does and it can, but what's most applicable is Washington State's statute. And that's what our legal team and that's what our leadership looked at initially was, you know, what does this mean? And the whole notion and the fact that this was being disputed or being appealed in the Ninth Circuit means that its application can go to the states that are part of that circuit. So that was part of the reason. You know, we have, you know, I don't think it's a secret that oftentimes it is very difficult in litigation to get, seek and get an injunction. And remember, the trial court indeed ruled for that injunctive relief. And that's, you know, that's a, that is a reason why we felt like that the, as a friend of the court, we needed to weigh in and opine supporting, you know, on behalf of all states that have some form of franchise protection, some form of franchise law, some form of limitation on termination without cause.
Right. It's a, well, it's important because it, it really does level the playing field, and it levels the playing field for smaller suppliers too. I don't know if they realize that, but it does.
Well, it's important because, you know, part of what we're seeing is we're seeing longstanding brand building distribution companies that are being, you know, shown the door, not for cause. You know, there's not a, there's not a state in the country where you can't terminate someone for cause. Some suppliers are critical and they talk about how much it costs or how difficult it is. And the fact is they don't do it very often. They don't terminate for cause. And so we don't have a big book, a track record. You know, we can name, name cases over the years, but we can name them. I mean, they're not, they're few and far between.
Right. I mean, that, you know, that's the Maris case is, I mean, yeah, termination was so rare and it has been, I mean, my own father was terminated and that's why he left the business, but it was for cause and in Texas and he still got whipped. So well, he must've been a terrible operator. So. I mean, good Lord.
Hey, man, I'm not going to go there. You know that. God rest his soul.
But God rest his soul.
I'm just saying, you know, that you know, we said this a number of years ago when there was kind of a much more focused effort or a more of a national effort against franchise laws. And, you know, our refrain at that time was, look, document, terminate, you know, do it by the book and don't tell us that you need to change these laws. Or attack these laws when indeed, you know, these laws are part of what makes this system so successful. Harry, I believe it with every fiber of my being. State franchise protection allows rival brands to get established. It's part of the success story that, you know, I sound like a broken record, but it's my job. 1983. Fewer than 50 breweries, full stop nationwide. Today, over 10,000, depending on who's counting. That's not in spite of the system. In some ways, that's because of the system. And these laws allow an established distributor from brewer A to take on a new brewer, brewer X, Y, or Z, get them to market without fear of cancellation, grow them, you know, to where some of these brands are now household names.
Yeah. All you have to do really is look at Red Bull and Monster and Bang and all the craft brewers and, you know,
and C4 and Celsius and, right. And Bang, C4 and Celsius are great, great examples of recent year where the distributor put those brands on the map. They got them the placements. The beer wholesaler built those brands and they were taken from them. And in most of those cases, they were given to a bigger supplier, either their network or their self-distributors. Big difference between beer and NA.
Yeah. Don't even want to go there.
Well, so. And it's, you, it's okay to go there. That's part of the expansion of the industry. It's just know your rights under the law. And while we're at it, you know, that's another thing that I think we're proud of. And this will be something that we'll talk about more in the distributor members meeting. Is making sure that people know their rights under the law. You know, when suppliers have changes to their existing agreements or they're proposing, you know, standards changes, NBWA is going to look at those and offer our members, you know, some guidance. you know, when we're not going to give 50 states of legal advice, but we are going to say, hey, this is different. This is materially could impact your business. Here is something you need to be aware of. And none of that's personal. It's just us doing our job.
Yeah, right. And so this TTB comment period, where are we on that?
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, when you started out with the administration's call for competition, 72 different verticals named, and, you know, this all of government review of regulations and competition. And then that is matched and followed by a competition report put together by TTB, which is followed by a proposed rulemaking. To answer your question, quite frankly, I don't have any idea. TTB, you know, I often say it moves with glacial speed, and that means hundreds and thousands of years. But by the same token,
I think that's an exaggeration, Craig. Well, but hundreds of thousands of years.
Okay, but years plural. And you know, we've had things more recently that have been languishing, you know, some labeling regulations that have languished for nearly 10 years, and then boom, they put out a reg. So all of this is work that we take seriously. You know, we filed extensive comments about this proposed rulemaking. I do think that some of the things like category management may get a workout before other issues. I think
that to me is the thing, the category management. Can I just tell you how I understand it and you tell me if I'm wrong?
Well, I don't know.
I think
stopped me before.
Because, you know, distributors and brewers have been providing category management services, category captainship, merchandising, you know, all of this under the umbrella of category management, and it's not, you know, it's not providing value to a retailer. Is there any notion that those type of category management practices will be declared illegal that we kind of take for granted today?
It's like every other question. The answer, it depends. It depends is, you know, if I give somebody a proposed shelf set and it's a schematic that's printed out, or it's a digital schematic that I'm demonstrating to them of where I think, you know, how I think I should go to market, how I think my brand should be displayed, how I think I can make that retailer more successful. Now, that's a pitch. That's a proposal. That's not an action. If I give them a planogram or a access to a digital third-party group, and I give them the access to that tool to utilize it for themselves, or they just entrust me to do it and they're going to do whatever I'm going to do, that's given a thing of value. It's a, you know,
that's done every day though.
Well, it depends. It depends on how it's done. And so, you know, and it's clear as mud. I mean, that's part of what we asked for in our comments was clarity, because you know, and oftentimes this is a supplier led initiative. And, you know, what do we know? We know distributors in the beer category are the only one with a federal license, and we are on the hook. And so, you know, we likewise want clarification around that so that everybody can continue to compete. You know, we know there've been some enforcements that have been unfair and have been frankly, you know, over trinkets and trash. They've been the allegation does not match the infraction. And certainly under the progressive discipline doctrine, which, you know, is not the punishment fitting the crime, but the punishment making an example out of, you know, the alleged wrongdoer. I mean, these are all offers in compromise. I do think it's healthy just the same for the industry at large to go through this exercise. It does help people understand where they're coming from. There is a consensus that can be formed. You know, we've seen in recent years, you know, our work or our, you know, leadership of the industry address some of these things. I mean, it was just about 7 or 8 years ago that Kroger came out with a proposed category management program that Southern Wine and Spirits was going to lead. And by the time it was all over, every segment of the industry weighed in with TTB saying this is not a good idea.
Yeah, I remember that.
And, you know, that's why we do these exercises. And so it's, you know, it's It's not easy. That's why they call it work.
Right. Right. Some of those offers and compromise are, they do seem arbitrary at sometimes. You're like, what? We'll wrap up, but quickly back to the convention.
Yeah, sure.
Is there anything cool or different that we need to look for? That where do I need to be?
So, a couple things that I would that are bigger speakers that I think are going to have some interesting things to say. One of them is Kevin Johnson, and I don't know, Harry, if you had a chance to meet Kevin, but he is, you know, started and organized the Black Brewer, National Black Brewers Association. I followed him a little bit when he was in the NBA. Most prominently with Phoenix Suns, but he finished his career and is from Sacramento, and then went from basketball to being the mayor of Sacramento. And he kind of an interesting, you know, big city mayor. Sacramento is a big city, but Kevin was a pretty thoughtful guy. I would not call him a progressive or a liberal big city mayor. Very had a pro-business kind of attitude, understood the game. Part of what the Sacramento Kings were able to do is kind of revitalize that city. But Kevin did, I think, a very good job as mayor navigating, you know, those challenges. He also is a business person and has been very successful with restaurants. Oak Brewery is his brewing concept that is in Sacramento. Interestingly, when he and I were together and I met him for the first time at the Brewers Association meeting, he was going to my hometown of Tulsa to open a restaurant in the Greenwood District. And for those that have followed the horrible history of my hometown when it comes to race relations, that's a revitalized part of downtown that you know, was the neighborhood, Greenwood, formerly known as Black Wall Street, that was the victim of, you know, a horrible action by an unbelievable white mob 100 years ago. And here's a guy that's taking his, you know, his restaurant concept stuff on the road. I think he's going to be great to hear from. We've got a political speaker, and I think politics are really important for the beer industry lately, because some of the shameful things that we've seen have been done by politicians with an angle. I mean, they're seeking clickbait. They're trying to drive eyeballs because that game has changed. And
you know about Ted Cruz, I guess, or
I think that one speaks for itself. But there were, you know, there were certain presidential candidates that couldn't help themselves from opining around that whole issue in April of this year. And you know, to me, it's a reminder of how broken and how hateful some Americans are when it comes to political issues. So Kristen Soltis Anderson, we had her about 6 years ago before the pandemic. She is now a CNN featured commentator, and she's got a Republican background, but she's a very strong kind of analyzer of public opinion. She's a pollster by background. She does a lot of focus groups. And I think she's going to provide us some enlightenment about what's going on with America. You know, it's very easy to, you know, almost have an attitude about wanting to throw in the towel when it comes to politics lately. The facts are, we've got to continue to advocate in this arena, and understanding where folks are coming from, the other person, especially if they've got a different opinion than you, I think is part of what we're talking about when we're talking about distributors of the future. They've got to be dialed into their marketplaces. They've got to be working to safeguard their brands and their brand. And then this is one that I'm really excited about. John Dornbos is a speaker that I got to admit I wasn't familiar with. I knew of his name as a Philadelphia Eagle. I knew of his experience in the NFL. I knew that he had done something on that show that I never watched called America's Got Talent. But I will tell you, he's a motivational speaker. And again, we know that beer wholesalers sometimes are difficult to motivate. But I got an email from the CEO of Remax Realty. This guy has 10,000 meetings of 10,000 people. And he said in this video email, he said, this is the best speaker we've ever had. So we're excited about John kind of putting a bow on things on Tuesday. We've got a sold out trade show. We've got great engagement. We've got great seminars. We've got an operations track. We've got a finance track. We've got a sales track. We've got a technology track, all kind of talking about these kinds of things.
I just got to plug that real quick because I looked those seminars over this morning, and I will be up early. I will be at as many as I can go to because they look really good, even for my own little business. You know?
Well, so. I know what that means to you because I do recall going to a seminar. This was a number of years ago, but I remember going down to help get things started in the morning. It was probably about 6:30, and I ran into you on the elevator, and I was going down, and you were going up.
Right. And I remember complaining, why are they so damn early?
Right.
And you did move them 30 minutes and, you know, and now that I'm at my age and I don't drink much anymore, I just, hey, make them at 5 a.m. I'll be there. I don't know, man.
I don't know. It's all about balance. But like I said, emphasis on distributors of the future. The other thing that we're working on is highlighting and hearing from some of those new market entrants. The entrance of big soda into the beer industry is fascinating. And of course we know that, Pepsi is entering the business very differently with their Blue Cloud distribution. We've talked about that a lot. We'll continue to talk about that. I don't think by anybody's measure, they can be happy with the progress they've made. While they are seeking national distribution, they are not in a majority of states, some 2+ years into this. Coca-Cola is entering in a more traditional way. And with the advent of their Red Tree beverage company, I think it's going to be interesting to hear where they're going. They have, to your point, partnered with a variety of manufacturers for the creation of these products. Brown-Forman said last week, Jack and Coke is the biggest product launch they've had ever. Yeah. They are going to market with these products with established, experienced alcohol distributors. And I think when we're talking about needing to navigate some of the challenges at the trade, at retail, challenges related to potential for consumer confusion, challenges related to marketing, placement, slotting fees, the whole notion of federal and state regulation, that may be a better way to go. But really excited about this. One other thing that is just gangbusters, and I know how familiar you are with this because of your own gin's participation. That's the Brew and Alliance for Women in Beer event that is going to be Wednesday morning, the 11th. This, Harry, has been a lights out success. Remember, Brew is the distributor driven program that is led by women distributors that has been just a fantastic outlet for professional development, best practices sharing. We've got the Frida Maisel Award, which will be given this year for the first time during the convention. But the Brew Alliance is a working group of distributors and brewers. And that meeting, like I said, starts on Wednesday morning. They have got a lineup of great speakers. Maggie from Heineken will be offering a keynote, as will Tracy Joubert from Molson Coors, the CFO. Those are two just dynamic female leaders in the industry. Jim Cook is going to be on part of a presentation. With the Brew Alliance, the Brew and the Alliance for Brewing, just a great, great group of leaders that I think at the end of the day, and that's part of why we're doing this, are going to make the industry stronger. But we also need to be looking at what can we do to sell more beer to more people. And that's where I think the Brew Alliance, that's where I think our partnership with the National Black Brewers Association. What else can we do to make this product more relevant to more consumers?
Definitely got to make, and the industry should reflect its consumer base more as well. I know Jen's been working hard on that. And we're going to have Kim McKinnish and Jen on this podcast next week. So
yeah, just absolutely for that. Mix it up with Kim. Kim is such a great leader and she has done a wonderful job not just of leading that group, but putting a lights out killer group of women together to move the ball forward. Both the Alliance for Women in Beer and the Brew program has just been fantastic. And I'm super proud of her, but I'm proud of all of those leaders that are helping advance the industry.
Well, listen, Craig, thank you so much for being on BeerNet Radio to give us a little primer of the convention. I will be there, and that's reason enough for people to go. Absolutely. I plan to be active. I might even get an electric scooter just so I can get around.
No, I don't think so. I mean, that'll keep you from going to bed on time.
Yeah. All right, guys. Well, thanks for being on, and Craig, have a good weekend, and I'll see you in Vegas in a couple weeks.
October 8th through 11th. Look forward to seeing you. Thank you. Cheers.
All right, buddy. Take care.